Now, can I say, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, it's relatively easy to run these courses. Anyone can run an evangelistic course. It is not easy to run them well.
This episode is helping people come to know Jesus, and we really recommend that you listen to the previous two episodes before you tune in today. So as we think about how to move people from being interested in knowing Jesus to being able to investigate and to come to repentance and faith, there are three areas that we need to consider. So your Sunday services, evangelistic courses, and small groups.
So let's start with your main gatherings.
Yeah.
Now, primarily they're going to be on Sunday, so I apologise in advance if I say Sunday, but there could be any day of the week. But let's talk about your main gatherings. Even in an increasingly secular age in church, where attendance has rapidly declined, still the primary point for most people, the primary contact for most people, their initial engagement with church is that main gathering. And what's more, when people within your church want to introduce their friends to Jesus, often the first event that comes to mind will be your main gathering. Mm. So we need to think about how we make those gatherings both accessible and engaging to those inside and outside the church. Because regardless of what your philosophy of church, what your ecclesiology is, if we're going to take seriously what the Bible says, we need to think about that passage in 1 Corinthians 14 that Paul says. Yeah. Do you want me to read it? You want to read it?
Yeah, I'll read it.
Okay.
All right. If the whole church assembles together and are all speaking in other tongues, and people who are outsiders or unbelievers come in, will they not say that you are out of your minds? But if all are prophesying and some unbeliever or outsider comes in, he is convicted by all and is called to account by all. The secrets of his heart will be revealed, and as a result, he'll fall face down and worship God, proclaiming, God is really among you.
All right, now, this is not the podcast to dissect all of 1 Corinthians 14 or 12 to 14. That's a different podcast entirely. But if we were to say at its most basic, Paul is saying here that he wants anyone to be able to walk into a Christian gathering and to not be able to be freaked out by what's going on there, to be able to hear the gospel and to recognize that God is at the center of what is happening, not us. At its most basic, I think that's what he's saying. So prior to launch, it's a great time to think about your gathering and work with your launch team around the negotiables, the non-negotiables, what it's going to look like when you do meet, so that they can begin to imagine what it would look like to walk away from those gatherings in thinking, I wish I'd brought my friend to this, while at the same moment having a visitor turn up and saying afterwards, I understand who Jesus is and I understand what he expects of me. Now, where they land with that moment, that's a different question, but wouldn't it be great if those were the things that you wanted, that happened after your Sunday gathering. Not in totality, but just there's some of the outcomes. Now, this isn't always easy, but it is absolutely worth the effort. It's not about professionalism either. It's about prayerfully anticipating and shaping what we do each week when we meet around the assumption that our church members will have thought about bringing their friends and their family who they have been praying for and witnessing to for years.
And if you've ever brought someone along who isn't a Christian to church, you'll know how nerve-wracking it is, and you'll see every weird thing that Christians do, the insider language, the things that don't go smoothly. We kind of become hyper-aware. And now there are some things that we don't want to change and we kind of just need to live with, but there are many things that are really in our control that we could do to make the gospel more clearly heard and make Christian community quite attractive. So there's more to say on this, and you'll find in the ebook there's a link to 9 guidelines that MBM has as they think through building a culture of mission in their main gatherings. But every single one of those guidelines is size independent. So you want to start the way you want to continue, and working through this with your launch team prior to launching is a great way to set the tone.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about the second thing. This is evangelistic courses. Now, evangelistic courses, just to say this again, evangelistic courses, they do not replace our desire to train people to share the gospel. They sit alongside it. But they are an essential part of helping everyone in the body be able to think through how they can introduce their friends to Jesus and to build that culture of mission. Now, this is not just about running them, although that's a start. This conversation is about much more than running them, because an evangelistic course provides an amazing opportunity to train and mobilize people as they plan for and talk to their friends about the gospel. Even in advertising, in talking from the front about evangelistic courses, there is a vision casting moment for you. You can equip people in how to raise the gospel in relationships through talking about evangelistic courses. How people experience Christian community in those moments is hugely important. Mm-hmm. How they experience positive gospel conversations, even around tricky areas, mm-hmm. what a great opportunity. And even the follow-up afterwards is how you help people who may have explored Jesus to a point but want to know more. All those things are amazing opportunities to train the body and mobilize them, as well as sharing the gospel mm-hmm. with someone who is seeking. Now, can I say, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, it's relatively easy to run these courses. Anyone can run an evangelistic course. It is not easy to run them well. A vast difference between those two things.
Well, we'll provide some links to videos that will help you think through what are some of the key questions around choosing your evangelistic course. But as you think through your plan, here are a few key considerations. So the first consideration is, what will you run? So as you decide on what to run with, you want to keep in mind how hard it will be for people to commit and therefore invite someone.
All right. So look, an invitation for a course that goes between 10 and 12 weeks, that's a massive commitment. That's too big. You're better off finding one that goes to that 4 or 6 week period that people can commit to a little bit better. Mm. That seems to be a sweeter spot for time frame. And you should be able to run that in a way that is engaging for people.
Yeah. And the second consideration is, how will you run it?
Yeah. So look, I said tongue in cheek before, easy to run. Look, it is a huge effort running these courses. In fact, it's a huge effort running them well. Mm. But they're absolutely crucial to run, and they're crucial to run well. And when you run it, you want to make it as inviting and comfortable and hospitable as possible. Mm. If you can run it in someone's home, brilliant, brilliant. As you run it as well, think through how it is you engage the gifts of the whole body in this moment. Not just on the night. Don't just keep thinking of the person up the front. There are the people who provide the house, the food, the vibe, the advertising. All those things are contributing to mission and helping people explore Jesus.
Yeah.
My suspicion is, if you're listening to this, you've got a heart to reach the lost. Geneva Push's vision has always been to see hundreds of churches evangelized into existence. Over the past 13 years, we've seen over 100 churches evangelized into existence, reaching thousands of people across Australia. The last few years, our vision has grown even more as part of Reach Australia. We want to see thousands of healthy, evangelistic, multiplying churches. As the planting side of Reach Australia, our goal is to see 200 more churches by 2030, and we would love you to join us in that. If you've got a heart for the lost, if you want to see churches across Australia proclaiming Jesus and people coming to know him, we would love you to join us by praying, by supporting us financially, by thinking about whether you could be in or lead a church plant. Go to genevapush.com or reachaustralia.com.au to find more. All right, third question is just, how often should we run it? These courses they're pretty resource intensive, particularly if you think about how to engage the whole body in it as well. So it's probably not going to be realistic to run 4 of them a year, amongst all the other things you're doing within church as well, all the other pieces of plumbing you've got in place. But it's generally good practice to run them at least twice a year. And in the kind of alternate terms, if possible, you run a group that helps people who are continuing to explore, help them continue to ask questions and engage with Jesus. Now, depending on your resources and who you've got, it may be that you the follow-up from these are people meeting one-on-one to work through the Bible, if that's what's good for them. Maybe you'll be able to run a group for it. But however you decide to run it, though, the key thing as you're locking this in is setting a date, making it clear, advertising it well, and then you absolutely have to run it.
Mm.
You absolutely have to run it. Evangelistic courses, in my experience, are one of the hardest things to get RSVPs for. hardest things. For people who aren't Christians, they might not commit until the last minute. They might pull out right at the last minute. And there's nothing you can do about that. That's just the way it goes. But you still need to run it. So when you're planning the event, invite Christians along as well with the premise, explain to them why you're inviting them along, and you need to train them how to behave at tables. That sounds like a strange thing to say, doesn't it? But you can't have them there thinking they fulfill one function and answering everyone's questions when really they're there for relational connection. But you stack the members with Bible study groups or however you want to do it, but you've got to make sure you run it. And that'll not only make non-Christians who are there feel more comfortable if there are other people in the room engaging well, as they won't feel like they're the only ones, but you'll be able to build confidence of other people who are Christians in the room as they see this happening. And I've seen that happen time and again. Anyway, last one, let me just keep going one more. What are people's next steps? Now, we said this at every point. It's a key question you ask. What are people's next steps from this moment, this evangelistic course? Not everyone who comes along is going to want to keep exploring, but you want a plan for everyone who does, everyone who might want that. Alongside, it's very rare as well for someone to come to some 4 to 6 week evangelistic course and at the end become a Christian. It seems like a strange thing to say because you're running an evangelistic course and, of course, you're calling for a response, but you want people to make an informed decision about it, not a knee-jerk reaction based on being manipulated or forced into it. And so 4 to 6 weeks for someone who might be new to it is nowhere near long enough. It's just the beginning of that on-ramp. And so what you're thinking through as a church plant is what resources do we have and what do we need to do in order to help them take the next step? Now, having someone lined up to meet with them, what material or what group they might be able to be part of, they're all key questions before you begin, not after you end your course and are trying to scramble something together.
Yeah, yeah. So these considerations that you need to keep in mind. So what will you run? How will you run it? How often will you run it? And then what are their next steps?
Yes. All right. Finally, small groups. This is a long one. But there's key, this mobilizing, this introducing people to Jesus, this is a key part of why we're planting. And so when we get to this moment, we want to work out how we utilize the whole body for mission this. So the third part of this is around small groups. Now, in thinking about your plant, you want to instill in people the biblical truth that God uses ordinary people as his instruments in this world and to call people to himself. That is us, just normal people. People like us, full of rough edges, full of doubts, fears, feeling like that is absolutely okay. Our confidence is in God, it's not the gospel. These are the key convictions you want to be driving into people through your preaching, through your conversation, through every structure. One of the key ways that we can help people work through these doubts and grow in their confidence of what it means to be a disciple who is passionate about making other disciples is through these small group structures within our church, this key piece of plumbing. Small groups are often a natural kind of glass house for growth, these more intimate relationships. And so we want to use them to help people build the skills to share the gospel with their friends, to pray for their friends, to be encouraging other people, to speak the truth in love, and having confidence that God does work in and through them as they do it. And so the small group structures within the church, they're instrumental for doing it. They help foster all those things. They help build missional heat. They're not the only place it happens. We can't put all our eggs in one basket with this. But we have limited structure, and this is a key structure that we want to think deliberately into. It's an important piece of our plumbing within the life of the church. So as you think about small groups, they allow us to do things like strengthen and reinforce the vision of the whole. Reinforce the DNA that we are here for what we're about. They provide natural places for interactive learning, for discipleship, for pastoral care, for development, all those kinds of things in a really safe setting. They're a natural setting for inviting not yet believers often as well because they meet in people's houses. Now, sometimes, you know, depending on the group, that may or may not be realistic, but they are often a really helpful setting for people just engaging a little bit. And for some groups, they can be a great place for innovative and missional endeavours. Our group is going to go down the road and engage in this community group or go to this soup kitchen once a fortnight. For some groups, they can do that without it kind of intruding is the wrong word, but impinging on all the other things that are going on in their life. Without church mandating you have to do something, it allows groups the freedom to be able to do that, and they can do that.
Yeah. Well, as we think about mission in our church, we need to keep considering how is it that we really nurture the culture of mission within all aspects of church life. So Sundays, preaching, our small groups, evangelistic courses, all while reminding the people of both the need and that they don't have to do it alone. And you really need to have listened to the previous two episodes. Oh, you can do what you want, I guess, but okay.
No, tell them what's up.
Yeah.
Tell them what's up.